Because hockey hasn't completely taken over your life yet. Subscribe to podcasts of Hockey Central at Noon through iTunes or your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. Put down that salad and man up your lunch hour with the best hockey coverage possible. You're listening to Hockey Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Hockey Central and Noon along the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network in Canada. Those watching on the NHL Network in the United States, welcome. Plenty to chew on just as we're coming on because the Mike Babcock news continues to, well, not trickle in, but it continues to be waiting out there, which we'll get to in a second. We'll talk about an epic in the Western Conference. The last four triple overtime games in the Stanley Cup playoffs have involved the Chicago Blackhawks. So not only have they played a lot of hockey over the last 4 years, they've played a lot more than you may think. New GM in Boston, which we'll get to. New coach in Edmonton yesterday. Get the thoughts here from these guys again. And a new contract for one of the goaltenders in Ottawa. All news to get to. But the big news, Doug McLean and John Shannon, I'm Brad Fay, by the way, continues to be Mike Babcock where it lands. And suddenly, when it was down to Buffalo and Detroit, maybe it's not, and maybe Toronto is back in the mix. They did say it was going to, Mike Babcock said it was going to end today. Does it?
Actually, I don't think it's a maybe. No. I think Toronto is in
the mix. Well, yeah. But meaning as far as when we woke up this morning, that wasn't supposed to be the case.
The bigger question is Babcock listening to them.
Yeah.
Maybe they're in the mix, but is Babcock listening to their offer? I mean, that will be the big question. And if they are still in it, well, that's good. You know, they do need a coach. So, and he's supposed to be the best one available. Although maybe the guy yesterday that got hired in Edmonton is every bit as good for a lot less money. But, you know, if they are still in it, that's good. It's great. Because I'm getting
John,
really – like, I listened to this press conference yesterday about now they're in the – they're going to start developing minor league coaches.
Well, don't pick so up
they
Kyle.
Can, so they can trade them for draft picks. Like, how about developing some players?
That would be
and
fun.
Then go, you know, work that way first. But we're in the hockey development business. All like you don't just do they not realize that teams have been doing that for a long time? Like trying to develop coaches of the minors to become I mean, come on, like enough already. Just get a new GM in there and let him talk.
Doug, as you all know, and you and I have
or get Babcock in and let him talk.
Yeah, he will.
Please. It's driving me batty.
Now we let John Shannon
talk. No. Yeah. No, keep going.
Seriously. Just get somebody in there to talk.
Yeah. You stop picking on Kyle.
I'm not picking on Kyle.
You're picking on Kyle.
But come off it.
I mean, he's supposed to have a press conference. He has to say something. I mean, come on.
Come on.
What is he supposed to stand there and say nothing?
Say
then you'd get mad.
Stand there and say, we've just let our coach go and we're going to start a search for a new minor league coach.
Well, I think
how about that?
He said that too. He said that too. Come on.
Anyway, I happen to like him.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
But, I mean, give him some media tips, please.
I was
serious.
I was letting you do that.
Kyle, give me a call.
All yours, John.
Well, I mean, what a busy day when you consider everything happening in Boston with Don Sweeney and Andrew Hammond signing and all this stuff. And oh, by the way, the playoffs are still on.
Yeah.
There used to be rules against all this
till
stuff.
Till 4 this morning. Yeah. Where were you?
Well, you were following my tweets. I knew you were reading my tweets about Duncan Keith's ice time. And
I just get it off the stat sheet.
No, you don't. I know you. You're sitting there looking at your Twitter. Oh, there's another guy ripping me. But what a hockey game.
Yeah.
What wow. A great
seriously,
hockey
that, game. That's what we should talk. Not that
we're
trying
no, we
to
will.
Want
and
to be
we want
the
to
host.
Touch on that. We'll get to the news.
See,
you
Shanny's
mentioned
trying to derail you, Brad.
Yeah, that's okay. No, we wanted to touch on Babcock.
Brad and I worked long enough to know.
It's a moving target, and at any point in this hour, another team could join the fray or Babcock's interrupt.
More bidding wars.
116 minutes and 12 seconds, 118 shots, 244 shot attempts.
Wow.
Where the tail of the tape, I think the best number, and I know you love him, Doug, Duncan Keith, playing almost 50 minutes. Their four D-men all played over 46 because they're basically playing with four D-men. And this is the kind of games that Chicago continually wins. And it could have been a real swing in this series if they go down 2-0. Now suddenly they go home as exhausted as everybody is. They're back in the driver's seat.
How many shot attempts? I wish I would have had that
244.
Last
244 attempts.
Shot attempts.
You like the attempts.
People were listening at the end of the game?
Shot attempts.
Were they still counting at 4 in the morning?
As soon as that puck went in, anybody in the Eastern time zone said, thank goodness.
Yes. Boom, and you know what? Click. And when it went off the head of Andrew Shaw, Doug was already halfway home.
What blew me away was the fact that we're deep into the third overtime. You know, guys playing two games in one night. And the skill level was still evident. You know, the goaltenders put on a spectacular performance, especially Corey Crawford. Yeah. People say, well, he's not very athletic. I'm sorry. He was pretty athletic on a couple of those. He put on a magnificent performance. The kid, Anderson, put on a great performance. I've never seen goalies. I never saw a guy as winded as I saw Crawford. When he's down on one knee trying to catch his breath, that's and Anderson still looked fresh.
Mm-hmm.
And then the response of Anderson going down the hallway after the game, he was so upset.
Snapping the stick. Yeah,
So it was, but the skill level was still evident after playing almost two complete hockey games at an intensity level that you don't see very often. I thought it was an amazing game.
Well, amazing game. And what you got a real sense with, Other than the 5-6 defensemen for the Chicago Blackhawks, I mean, everybody else played a ton.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody. I mean, all four lines of both teams. It was something to behold. And not that the goal was a dirty goal, but you knew something had to happen with traffic in front.
Usually the way it is, right?
And Brent Seabrook being involved.
Does it ever surprise you when he gets the puck? How many times have we seen him in the right shot drill that puck to the net and either go in off somebody or go in himself? Yeah. I mean, he's like, talk about a clutch.
Hit the net. I mean, and here's the other thing. We went through a stretch, you know, the Patty LaFontaine goal for the Islanders, which I just celebrated when they played each other again, the Capitals, was that first multiple overtime game for a generation of fans. Mm-hmm. Then we went through a stretch of real weird 10 or 12 years where all those 4 and 5 overtime games, and they were so bad. The shots would be 3-2 in each overtime period. Now we're back with the rare of a triple overtime game, but is it because the two teams that are maybe on paper the two best teams in the National Hockey League that made it so compelling, or are teams actually not trying to not lose? They are trying to win.
Well, first of all, this is the second one the Blackhawks have had already this playoff run, and the only other one they had went to double overtime. So, I mean, I think it's a sign of the goaltending, as Doug talked about. I mean, there were enough scoring chances in the 56 minutes for either team to walk away.
What caught me off guard were the momentum swings. 17-1 shot advantage at one point for one team. 9-2 shot advantage for another team at another point. I mean, it just kept, but quality chances and skill plays. And, you know, Chicago, like, you've got to take your hat off to them. They have been physically pounded.
Mm-hmm.
That defense group of four guys have had to pay a major. They're the best breakout team in the NHL. Bar none, all season long. They're the team that gets the puck going more efficiently than any team in the NHL. Not even close with the way they stretch it out. Long passes, rink-wide passes.
Forwards get it with speed, right?
But they couldn't get it going game one because of the physical pounding. They made some nice adjustments. They got Comiskey in there to give them a little lift, getting the puck
going.
You
liked Comiskey last night.
I liked him. I mean, he gave them, 15 minutes or so, you know? I thought Timonen and him had to give them 10.
Yeah,
To get them through 60 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, it's 1834,
to get them through 60.
1834 through two games.
Right, and I thought they should have. They had to get 10 for them. But to watch Keith, after you said 50 minutes or, you know, less than by a few seconds.
9 seconds short.
To play the way he was playing late in that game, to battle for pucks, to battle for possession, you know.
And how much does he weigh now? He's small enough anyway. Seriously. He's probably playing a shinny celebrity game with Vince Vaughn back in Chicago that didn't ever get him off the ice.
And then to watch Taves go every shift and Ryan Kessler battle. Like, people can like or dislike Ryan Kessler, but I'll tell you what. This guy is a gamer.
Yeah. He wanted out.
He had to leave the bench last night because I suspect he was dehydrated, cramping up, comes back, and he's a warrior. Mm-hmm. And you know, like, the admiration that you have for guys. I've gone through a triple overtime. I've watched players between periods in triple overtime, deep into the playoffs, and what they go through between periods on the bench to stay in it.
You have guys on IV?
No, we didn't have guys on IV, but it was like hydration. It was, I mean, you go in there to try to talk to them between periods, and they got them, their feet are up on the benches, well, they're laying all over the dressing room.
And you also don't know. It's not like, you know, you can save it or save, not double shift your lines because you know it's going six periods. Right. You have no clue.
We went six periods in June.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you.
To close that, Doug, you're saying if instead of Bonino and Lucas Pisa, if the Canucks had Kessler, they might have not blowing that 3-0 lead against Calgary in game six, that trade a little more lopsided than.
I hope the first round pick turns out
well. That's, yeah.
And he might.
Jared McCann.
He might. You know better than I do, Shannon. You're the junior guru.
No, I'm not.
Well, yes, I've listened to you. I watched it. You are.
Square to the puck?
I want.
I did that just for you.
Speaking of square to the puck, I love
you're
this.
You're square. I don't know if you're square to the puck.
Joel Quenneville asked if it was Corey Crawford's best game. You know, he said, yeah, without question, the career high 60 saves. Longest game in Blackhawks history, by the way. But I love this quote. Quenneville said he was impressed with the last 38 shots Crawford saw over the final 79-42 of the game. That was the best stretch, the last 80 minutes, which I love. But, good for Crawford, John. As we know, every single year he's questioned, and he's answering again so far.
I tell you what, I mean, as soon as you saw him take over the net late in the Nashville series, and then through the whole Minnesota series.
It was good for him, the one. That was a good move by Quenneville, right, initially, and getting him back in, and now it's been, But
I don't think they had a choice.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
They wrung every ounce of goaltending out of Scott Darling before they had to put Crawford back in.
How hilarious was the puck off the head?
Oh, yeah. Wasn't it great?
So then we, you know, and Darren Millard mentioned it, and we were doing the Memorial Cup in Mississauga, and Darren and I and Nick, and Darren mentioned it right away, and he said, Smith Pelly put one in off his head. It's the only other time I've seen that. And then I mentioned, I think Shaw may have been in that game.
And he was.
Because he was playing for Owen. So they looked it up, and Shaw was playing for Owen Sound. Yeah. And so Shaw saw that being disallowed. So obviously he had a brain cramp and missed that was disallowed. Because when it goes in fairness to Shaw, it goes in, you're thinking, oh, my God, I just scored in overtime.
That's fantastic.
And he was pointing at his head,
maybe
meaning that it just deflected off his head, not headbutted it.
I don't think so, Doug. I think
pretty good.
So Darren was so astute to pick that up. And then the only reason I remember Shaw was because Nick kept saying about, hey, I like this Shaw, undrafted guy. Mm-hmm. And all, you know, and Nick actually phoned some NHL teams about Shaw, pushing him from that Memorial Cup. So then Darren put it together. Yeah, Shaw was in the game and saw, you know, it was pretty funny.
It's cool. And it's something that we didn't see a lot in the old days before helmets. Although I picture Phil Esposito with the Brill Cream could have withstood that. But what do you think, rules aside, should you be allowed to? I mean, it's an athletic play. You can't punch it in, but you have the accuracy with your head the one time a year that it's going to happen. Let it go. We need more goals.
Nah, I mean, the rules are the rules. I mean, you know, you're supposed to play hockey with a stick. You know, you're not supposed to bat it in with your glove. You're not supposed to kick it in. You're not supposed to head it.
But you can redirect it with your skate now. So they have made that adjustment.
It can be redirected off your skate.
Right. So
you
that
can
was,
have a kicking motion. But, if he had stood there.
But no, this was redirected off his head. So no, maybe they should look at that.
There was a distinct heading motion.
Coley, Campbell, and the group have to, you know, because they've changed the kicking of the puck, maybe they have to look at the headbutting, eh?
He was just doing his Patrick Waugh impression.
Because it was a distinct heading motion.
Definitely, Doug. So, I mean, if you look at the difference between Dominic Moore's goal at one game one in the Eastern Conference and Andrew Shaw's, there was motion involved.
But here's the thing. If it's a distinct kicking, if it's a real distinct kicking where you soccer kick it, you can't allow that because of injuries.
Yeah.
But headers is how do they call it? Headers.
Yeah,
if you use a header,
yeah,
is that going to injure anybody? Well, you could hit somebody in the head, you know, a headbutt.
Yeah. We're concerned about concussions now, Doug.
Okay, because I mean,
puck to the helmet.
Like I think, this committee that does the rules every year, they're running out of things to talk about, aren't they?
No, I tell you,
this is something they should
respectfully, you know, and you know this. David Poile will have this on his list for the managers' meeting in March.
Yes.
David always comes with about 30 things in his list.
Well, yeah. I just think they're running out of things, and this would be something to put on the agenda to justify a meeting.
Here's a question before we move on from this series. In preparation, both teams.
Coley's phoning me on the way home.
I'm sure he is.
if you're either coach winning or losing in that game and you play tomorrow night at 8 Eastern time, what do you do between now and then? Anything? Like, is it just get healthy, sleep, and morning skate
treatment
tomorrow?
No.
No.
Well, tomorrow.
Yeah, but
optional.
Today is strictly everybody shows up.
Yeah.
And it's a treatment.
Yeah.
Treatment day. It's in the cold tub. It's massages. It's hydration. It's nutritionist. It's heavy duty. Hey, we've got to, it would have started.
Get back.
It would have started during the game last night, you know, if the truth was known, with people, the trainers being heavily involved in how are we going to get this recovery. The Blackhawks, you got to fly from the West Coast. I know both teams do, but you've got a manpower challenge on the back end. Is it going to catch up? I don't know. They're such a heart and soul group. I don't know if it'll catch up to
them. Doesn't seem to.
Well, the longer, you know darn well, the longer the series goes, it has to catch up. And so from that perspective, the Blackhawks had always planned to stay overnight in Southern California last night. There was no plan to charter. Even though it was an early puck drop, 6 local time in Anaheim, there was no plan for the Blackhawks to fly home. They were supposed to stay over and fly out this morning, which, the more you think about it in playoffs, is the smartest thing to do, as opposed to knowing that you can play 5 minutes and have a shootout and get on your plane and fly to the next city.
Unless you're within
your body
division
as quickly as possible.
And maybe does you know, it's one of those things where, but every little thing counts in something like this. Is it an advantage for Anaheim being the road team because they don't have the quote unquote distractions? You hate to call families and friends and that distractions because you're back at home. But maybe on a day like this, when all you need to do is rest, get your fluids, get your treatment, and you can hang out at the hotel while the other guys are coming home dealing with little boys and girls that are.
Went through it for a 7-week period where you used to go the night before the hotel, the home team
would go
and check into the hotel. Do you know what a treat it was to drive in at 4 in the afternoon? Jill's got the kids there. Everybody's fighting and battling and grinding. You're driving down to the Harbor Beach Marriott, the sunroof open, and you're saying, oh, you know, nice dinner tonight and relax. You got the king size. You got the ocean view. Yeah. Kind of relaxing.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense in this case. I mean, they've been on the road for a while. The Blackhawks, they'll be
family,
anxious to see the
family. The family wear and tear hits you, because I'll never forget, we're going into game 7 against Pittsburgh, and Mackenzie, my daughter, who at the time was probably, 6, she said, Dad, if you lose tonight, like, she was pissed off. She had her fill of hockey. She said, if you lose tonight, what happens? I said, honey, if we lose tonight, hockey's over for this year. And she said, oh, my God, I hope you lose tonight. Yeah. So
the
family becomes,
For sure.
It becomes part of
the
whole thing.
And they don't know. The kids don't understand. They want to know if you're working tonight, and they don't realize. Yeah.
But it's a fun. There's nothing like going. And, Shanny, you went through 30 playoffs.
Except the warm weather.
Finals,
and there's a certain feel, right?
There's nothing like it.
No.
The city is electric. And the first time.
Most cities are.
And the first time as a fan, that's all I can experience. But that was 82 in Vancouver. And you had no idea what it's like. And then you try to tell people that hadn't been through it, because Calgary went through it later when I went to college. They're telling guys, I said, in 86, I said, you won't believe it.
And
everybody gets on board.
I know how excited the NHL was about Florida and Colorado being in the finals. I can just imagine how excited they'd be about Tampa, Anaheim being in the Stanley Cup final.
Chicago, New York, it would be pretty nice for the NHL. But
they don't really care.
Publicly, they don't really care. They can't care. I mean,
all combinations would be good series.
Oh, my God. But every combination will be a great series.
But New York, Chicago, I was thinking this, and there you go, when Doug pointed how many finals you've been to.
Too many.
LA,
30, wasn't it?
LA, New York last year, in terms of two cities, and two of the best cities in North America, was cool, but the travel was so far back and forth for those covering it. New York, Chicago, if that's the final this year, it might be the best ever. If you look back in history, two cities, two of the best three cities in most people's mind.
Amazing.
And not long travel and spend 2 weeks in those cities. It may be the best ever, if that's what happens.
And towns that...
Which means nothing other than the media.
And I say this respectfully, two towns that actually love the game.
That's the key. Original Six.
New York loves a winner.
But
they don't necessarily love hockey, but they love a winner. And
Rangers have that.
Oh, they... I'm a radioaholic. I listen to New York sports talk lots. And Mike Francesa's talking about the Rangers.
But you know what?
That's big.
I'm like you, Shanny, but I'm addicted to CNBC, you know, the business channel in the U.S. I'm addicted to it.
How are you doing with it?
And it's bizarre how they, who never bring up hockey, and all of a sudden, all the guys on CNBC are talking hockey.
Yeah.
You don't hear it very often. I know Gary Bettman's been on the show, you know, a few times, but they are talking about it. Kramer, who's the, you know, the stock guru, and all the different guys on there are talking Rangers. And, you know, it's really catching on, and they're saying, hey, how great is hockey? I mean, it's hockey right now. Is at an all-time high, guys.
This is where...
It's at an all-time high.
Well, all the recent winners... Sorry, John, because Boston, Chicago, New York going to the finals, all the original finals, original six teams and the teams with the legacy, now suddenly it matters
again. And when you can see great hockey, it's such a treat.
Well, and this is where... And I know I worked there, and I know the thinking process, but the wisdom of doing a deal with one network... to get multiple opportunities. I mean, you can see Henrik Lundqvist on Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah.
You can see discussion points on, I mean, and NBC and the networks of NBC have done a magnificent job knowing full well that every playoff game in the United States was on a television network that most Americans could get. It has worked out very well in the U.S.
and
with the NBC deal. Mm-hmm.
And despite what some of the media critics have said in Canada, not that I'm biased, but Rogers have done a pretty damn good job getting hockey out to the fans this year too, eh?
I mean, really,
it's been a special year to be able to watch hockey and every different, you're shifting game to game. It's been unbelievable.
By the way, Doug, you are biased.
Yeah.
And I have a long-term contract, so it doesn't matter. But if they like me, they can bump me up a little, eh?
Yeah.
Scott, are you listening?
Oh, stop. Jeez.
Hey, before we go to break, let's touch quickly on...
Usually you do that, Shanny, looking to kiss up.
30 seconds each on Don Sweeney, 6 years the assistant to...
No surprise.
...Shirelli and moving in. After the exhaustive search, they go with the guy that worked underneath.
You know, the surprise for me is that the Boston Bruins... have brought back 82-year-old Harry Sinden to become in more of a prominent role in the organization. I like it. I mean, I sat for 20 years in meetings and listened to Harry Sinden. Mm-hmm. And every time Harry, and you were in there, Shanny, every time Harry Sinden spoke at a GM's meeting, you learned something.
Harry's one of the Mandarins. I mean, he's one of those guys, those cornerstone guys like Bill Torrey. Lou Lamoriello is part of that group. That when they speak, you have to listen.
Yeah.
And I mean, Steve. When I read it in the Boston Herald, that Steve Harris wrote the story that Harry was, you know, helping, you know, Charlie and Cam out with the search and the discussion process. And I think this is also part of Don Sweeney probably had a role in saying, "Hey, Cam, let's not fire Claude Julien at the same time."
And I think it's the Bruins' way. You know, the Bruins.
There was a time, though, Harry was out of favor, though.
I know that. But when you look at what number of GM, look at the history of the Boston Bruins. What number GM is he? Eighth in the history of the franchise?
Yeah, it's...
The eighth GM. We've had teams that have had eight GMs in a four-year period.
Oilers have had that many coaches in the last five or six years. Yeah,
you know, it was a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. Sweeney was getting the job. If guys wasted their time going in for interviews, it was because he was getting the job from day one.
Right.
He's paid his dues. You know, he's got a relationship with Cam. I think it's a good move.
And Harry Sinden, it came up with the phrase Team Canada,
which
everybody uses now. Like we never used that 72, right? They're trying to see what to call the team. And he said, how about Team Canada, which sounds so obvious now, but nobody had used
it. Really unique, too, that a team say we're naming a GM and Don Sweeney is going to be in charge of all aspects of hockey operations. Isn't that unique?
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't happen very often.
Not anymore.
That the GM gets to be in charge of hockey operations.
Yeah.
Like, seriously. Isn't that unique?
Turn back the clock. Good catch, by the way. All right, John, one more.
You don't like these new organizational charts.
I don't mind them. I don't mind them.
You just don't understand.
Don't BS me.
I don't mind them.
Just don't. I understand them totally. Just don't BS me.
So you think Brendan should be named general manager?
if he wants to be the GM and make all the decisions, yeah, he should.
No. He doesn't want to be GM, but he wants to make all the decisions.
Yeah, so whatever. I don't care what he is.
Both excited and humbled, said Don Sweeney. And I think in Boston, it's one of those things where you keep it in the family. Everybody there is happy. Yep. We'll take a break. Hockey Central at noon on the Sportsnet radio and television networks. And the United States on the NHL Network. We're back in a few.
That little speaker on your phone doesn't stand a chance. Subscribe to the Brady and Walker podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Back on Hockey Central Noon along the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network in Canada and those watching on the NHL Network in the United States as we continue, like everybody else, to watch for a Mike Babcock update. And nothing yet, but you were mentioning, John, about the Pegula situation. Buffalo makes maybe the time frame today change a little bit.
Yeah, you have to wonder. The NFL owners' meetings are finishing today, so you have to wonder whether that delay, if in fact he does go to Buffalo, does that delay the decision for Mr. Pegula and Mrs. Pegula to be there when and if there's an announcement of a coach for the Sabres today.
Yeah, and Pegula would be there, so the timeline fits. And I'd love to be a fly on the wall of Mike Ilitch, Jimmy Devolano, and Ken Hall and listen to them chat through this process. I'm telling you, I would love to be a fly on the wall. But anyway.
What do you mean by that?
Well, the fact that it's coming to a head. You know, it's been 10 years.
That's a good thing, though.
Yeah, I think it's a great thing. It's been 10 years. Kenny was smart enough to set this all up that this is, Mike, you want to talk. You want the big dollars. Here's the window. Go see. Bring it to a head. Blashill will slide in as being the next coach. Everybody's happy. The Red Wings are happy. The players are thrilled. Babcock gets what he wants and deserves. I mean, the guy's had an unbelievable run. He gets an opportunity to go where he wants to go.
Wings are confident that next year they have a quality coach.
Yeah, the Red Wings, I'm not convinced that the Red Wings don't think it's time for a change. I'm not convinced of that. I really am not. Babber, you know, if Babcock's really smart, maybe, like, Babcock's a smart guy.
Sure.
You know, to me, he probably is ready to move on as well. And look, Toronto, unbelievable challenge. Buffalo, great challenge. Big money. Hey.
And he's done a great job of, without an agent, of creating a frenzy. When you consider the fact that, I mean, rarely have we seen these types of bidding wars and more what would you call it, a public display of interest.
Yeah. Well, it's like Brian Burke when he came to Toronto in a higher position, but I know what you mean.
And the accessibility of Mike Babcock. Reporters yesterday tweeting that, well, Mike just told me. And the interview that
he's very good that others, in that regard with the media.
And it was a little bit similar, but like Brian Burke coming here was like a 6-month
it was a search. Yeah.
Campaign.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, was it a search or a campaign?
Yeah.
Well,
I know where you're getting at. Yeah.
Searched by the Leafs and a campaign by Brian.
Yeah.
You don't think that this hasn't been going on for a year with Mike Babcock?
And the opposite. Wasn't Anaheim that offered him a 10-year deal to stay?
Yes,
and now Babcock getting offered a 10-year deal, it sounds like a
I was
goal.
In Detroit when the whole Keenan tampering thing was going on.
You got to tell that story one more time.
Yeah.
Because that's the best
makes
story.
Makes sense now.
That is the best story ever.
And
tell the story.
Don't sell it too short, John.
No, it is a great story.
Well, we got fired. Brian, first of all, Brian and I are on the road and we came back and the parking lot attendant said, "How was the road trip?" And it was great. He said, Mr. Mike Keenan was in to visit Mr. Ilitch while you're away.
That to me is.
Oh, I'm thinking,
there's your source, his deep throat.
And then when we got fired, Brian and I, and I remember talking to Scotty, and Scotty saying, "Hey, don't worry about it." And Scotty was still there, and he said, "Don't worry, Mike Keenan's coming in." So then I tell it to a buddy of mine in PEI. We're just talking, BSing, a great friend of mine, Paul Skirner. I said, "Hey, you know, Mike Keenan's coming in." And what I forgot when I was telling it to him is that he owned a radio station. And he and George Matthews did a press release and sent it out. Keenan's in front of 700 people in New York at the Stanley Cup Finals playing the Canucks, and they reporters start asking about him going to Detroit, and they say, well, the report committed a PEI. Oh, and man. I'm thinking, oh, anyway, that's in books.
And Mike would have loved that. Mike would have loved
Mizell,
that.
Barry Mizell?
Barry Mizell.
Those in the book. Anyway.
Well, here's the other thing.
So there is, I would never say that has there been tampering going on. Hmm. I would never say that.
Here's the
I might
final
ask the question, but I'd certainly never confirm.
Final piece in this mix, and you're talking about a lot of money, so it's hard, you know. And you may have been in this situation, Doug, where Matty, you talked about your daughter, Mackenzie, wondering when the season was going to end. So with Babcock, with the young family in Detroit, you know, the uprooting where you stay, and the Red Wings probably eventually come up to $4 million to keep him or whatever, or they've said 3.25, or move into Buffalo for the boatload of money and the different challenge, but moving your family there. You know, at this point, for that kind of money, does that come into play at all, or is it basically understood it's a business, we're going to go there, sorry, here we go, we're finishing school there and everything else? I mean, how much would that weigh on him?
You know what? I you always say it weighs, the family is a consideration. But I think there would be enough of a process going through, hey, this is a great opportunity. Hey, this is what you work for.
It's a different job than going to the office 9 to 5.
To me, there's 50 million reasons to go to Buffalo.
Yeah.
Or Toronto.
And here's the other one, John, because I know.
And the challenge. Like, let's not forget that the money's
there. He's got
there,
nothing to prove in Detroit. No.
But this is a great challenge for Mike Babcock. Yep. Most guys that do this flop.
So, and the timing in Buffalo is nice with the draft pick, with likely Eichel coming in, and the money and outgo. They're steady. It's a traditional franchise that it just wants to win.
How many
so
of these big name guys go to teams and end up being successful? We saw Joe Torre go to the Dodgers. Yep. We've seen some great.
You're suggesting it doesn't happen very often?
It doesn't happen very often.
Well, I'll tell you what.
It certainly doesn't happen very often.
You mentioned Scotty Bowman's name. You know, Scotty Bowman was passed over for the general manager's job in Montreal. They gave it to Irving Grundman.
That's why he went to Buffalo, right?
Scotty got it. There was a bidding war that summer between lots of teams, the Buffalo Sabres.
Similar thing.
And the Toronto Maple Leafs were in on that one, too.
Why not?
And he ended up going to Buffalo, and we are all great friends of Scotty, and Scotty still has great roots in Buffalo, but that would hardly be viewed as a tremendous success.
That was 7 years where it was not good.
Good regular seasons.
And then
always
he ended
that
up
low
okay,
scoring. Okay. You know, they finished top two or three overall a couple times, but never any success.
People forget that Scotty left coaching after Buffalo and went to work for John Shannon with Hockey Night in Canada.
And when Tiger swung his stick at him, that was a turning point in Vancouver.
And then he went. And then he went to Pittsburgh as a player personnel.
Player personnel guy.
Fell into the coaching job, and then all of a sudden he had the second phase of his career.
Right.
With
And a wonderful phase of his career in Pittsburgh and Detroit.
Here's the final thing. Perfect with Scotty and your...
But here, just one final thing.
Sure, go ahead.
But Scotty, there was a mini bidding war, but Scotty was smart enough the second go around to say, where's the best chance to have made... I mean, Pittsburgh was just with Mario.
He won the second. He coached the second cup.
And Detroit was ready to take a step. And that he didn't do a great job in both places.
Yeah. Yeah. And then he's kind of got his fingerprints at Chicago through.
But he wasn't going from Buffalo back to a.
No.
No.
You know,
so he was going to a contender.
Here's my final thing on that, because I know people are out there and that, you know, have never been or never spent time. And it's always people, Buffalo, you know, they make the joke, who's going to want to go there? But so many guys that go there and swear by it, love it. Harry Neal end up living there and driving up to Toronto to work.
William
Ruff. To work hockey in Canada. So because your friendship with Scott and he stayed down there, it's more than what you see when you drive through the industrial area. There are some nice pockets of people love
Western
living in
New York is a great place to live. You know, Williamsville, East Amherst, Clarence, even Lockport. I mean, there are some great little pockets. And great people. Western New Yorkers are great people.
I remember talking to Lindy, because Lindy left
us in Florida. Not much different than Detroit, by the way.
Yeah.
Left us in Florida to go to Buffalo, and he had 15 wonderful years in Buffalo. Yeah. Family, location, everything. So, I mean, Brad May, you know, one of our cohorts, loves Buffalo and loved his time.
It's good. It's good. Good to hear. We'll talk about
The Sens goalie. The playoffs are still on, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, just checking.
We'll talk about tonight's game, but let's do the three stars.
That was our update with nothing to say.
There's the music. Let's do our three stars before
you're first, Brad.
Move on. Oh, I'm first. No, I think I'm going to go last today. Okay. You'll know why. Go ahead, Doug.
Well,
you want to look over it to see what
I gave Bob Nicholson a shot a couple of years ago that the only thing he'd won was the ladies under 18, and he had to up his game. I thought Bob upped his game yesterday with the hiring of, well, he didn't really hire him, but his general manager did. I don't know who's hockey ops there.
We're in Edmonton.
So anyway, I love the hire, but my first star was Crawford, wasn't it?
Yeah.
We should write it down.
A traditional look over the shoulder.
Crawford was my number one star, and I'm going to give Bob Nicholson, because we won the world championship with his, his old management team.
His
master plan. I hope it works as well. Those Olympic goals and things. I hope it works as well in Edmonton.
Can I go now? Okay. I'm going to go with the... I'm going to show my BC bias, the Penticton, BC native, Duncan Keith, 49-51 of ice time, an absolute monster night of hockey when you consider that they played almost two full games.
Tell the truth. Did you pick Crawford first, and then because it was taken, you went to Keith?
I went to Keith all the way.
I saw John's email in first with Keith.
Yeah.
Kelowna Rocket, and they're back to Memorial Cup where you were getting ready to head.
Good plug for the Memorial Cup. Kelowna, Quebec, Friday night.
My star is the farewell episode tonight, the show for David Letterman, who was such an influence on so many of us in broadcasting. And I figured it's Crawford and Keith, and I knew you guys would go there, so I thought.
And a lover of hockey.
Outside the box.
A lover of hockey.
But, anyway, in terms of broadcasting, an absolute icon, 33 years, and Dave says, there he is, says goodbye for the final time on...
There is Henrik.
Yes. So, there's hockey. The Rangers, first thing they did when they won the Stanley Cup in 94 was take it on Letterman.
Didn't he have 19,000 guests in his career?
That's what they're saying, yeah.
Isn't that unreal?
One of the guy that runs the audience side of Letterman shows, a guy named David Kay, is a giant San Jose Sharks fan, has always been great to the Shannon family when they've needed tickets for Letterman.
Great. So. Fantastic. I wish I'd talked to you before. I never did get to see him, but I've watched almost all of those.
Serious? You never went to see him?
33 years. Always. I didn't know. I just never worked out. But my wife went and saw him, and it's one of those experiences. The guy is a legend. So legends trying to be made again, and will the New York Rangers on the year that Letterman says goodbye.
Yeah.
At another Stanley Cup. That series is tied at one, and the one goal and 2-1 games ended quickly, didn't they? 6-2 in game two. So what do we look for tonight?
Well, another spectacular goaltending performance. Here's the thing that blows me away. Are you telling me McDonough and Girardi, who just shut down Ovechkin, can't contain Tyler Johnson? Yeah. That's how good this kid has
been. Incredible story.
These are the two of the best shutdown defensemen in the NHL, and he dominated. So, to me, what does McDonough and Girardi do tonight against Tyler Johnson?
And McDonough said he was embarrassed was the word he used for their play in game two.
Yeah.
So you'll see a bounce back.
Yeah. Rick Nash has got to find. Yeah. Look, I'm sorry. I watched them go with a 5-on-3 the other night for almost a full 2 minutes, and people say I love Rick Nash, but I'm sorry. When you got a star struggling that is a goal scorer, you get him out on the 5-on-3.
It's like the empty net situation.
Like, are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. Anyway, he's got a...
I think Henrik Lundqvist has to probably play his best game of the playoffs tonight to make a difference. And just as importantly, I think he has to stay in the net.
He's got to be as good as Crawford.
He's got to be better than the guy at the other end, Ben Bishop. And the problem is that Bishop actually can play the puck better than Lundqvist. And Henrik can't play the puck very well. He's got to stay in the net. I mean, I think that was when you look at the second half of the game, when obviously there was, and Lundqvist was angry, whether he was angry at his own teammates or
he'd be angry at his own teammates.
Well, you know what?
He can do that.
I think he should play his game and worry about doing his job and then let the rest of the team worry about theirs.
And as you say so eloquently, stay square to the puck.
Best road record in the NHL in the regular season for the Rangers. Best home record for Tampa. The playoffs have been kind of odd in that regard for them. Jim Houston, Craig Simpson, Glenn Healy, Scott Oak, Hockey Night Canada tonight at 8 Eastern. As Doug, you get a night off, and you're just like the players in your series. Fluids. And
really, when you're doing I can't wait for Chicago Anaheim tomorrow night at 8. I mean, it's been that
exciting
every night.
Well, it's on now. The series is on now, without question. And the other bit of news on this day, and a lot bigger news for the man himself, Andrew Hammond, a 3-year extension. Mm. Average annual value of $1.35 million, fresh off that 21-2 bizarre run that he had. But the biggest key, and I think it's a good deal, fair deal, and if he continues that, it's a real steal. But what do they do now? Because Brian Murray said if we sign the Hamburglar, we're trading one of the other guys.
And you know, with if Babcock ends up in Buffalo, they're going to be looking for a number one goalie. The Edmonton Oilers definitely are looking for a number one goalie.
Jose.
So there's a marketplace.
The Edmonton and Buffalo are the two that come to mind for sure.
There are stories circulating now that the Sabres are out.
The Sabres are out of the Babcock.
There are stories circulating in social media that the Sabres are out.
Really? Wow. That's so. So
which
he's coming.
It's Detroit or Toronto.
So he'll be our guest tomorrow in Toronto. He'll be our guest.
Wow.
Well,
wow.
Again, I just that's in the social media world.
All right.
So that means Toronto or Detroit. Where would you pick, Shanny, if you were Babber?
Well, I'd stay in Detroit, but the biggest challenge, the biggest money, the biggest spotlight, the biggest stage is
biggest challenge.
It's all in Toronto.
But boy, they're along.
Like as Brian Burke said, Brian Burke said, to come to Toronto and win a Stanley Cup is the ultimate.
Yep.
You know?
Drove him out. He could go have dinner in Anaheim as a Stanley Cup champion and nobody would even recognize him.
Fletcher, who revitalized the Toronto Maple Leaf franchise in the early 90s, is still viewed for 20 years after the fact as a demigod here. And they got to the conference final.
Conference final, yeah. that's the year they're holding to. I mean, as Gord Stellick is fond of saying, the Leafs are, and he says about other teams, but they're 2 years away from their five-year plan, especially if it's the bloodletting is still continuing before they start it over. So that'll weigh into Mike Babcock because you're not that you take a hit with your legacy, but knowing that if you go to Buffalo, you have a quicker chance. And I asked you this off the air. Yeah. You said no question, quicker chance to turn it around.
It's a process here. There's no doubt about it. So it's Detroit. If this talk is true.
Well, let's face it. The one thing the Maple Leafs can offer, I believe, Babcock more than the other two is more power.
Totally.
There is no general manager right now. Maybe Mike Babcock hires every coach in the organization from the East Coast League to the American League on and says, okay, we're going to coach it and do it my way. I mean, the Sabres will spend as much money as anybody, but it's not the Saturday night stage as the Maple Leafs are and the circus. Brad, we joke about it because it goes back to Brian Burke because he talked about it. He coined the phrase the blue and white disease.
Yeah.
You can get blue and white disease very quickly here and fall in love with the fact that you are with the Toronto Maple Leafs and they're trying to reinvent it. And if Brendan Shanahan was able to pull this off, it would be one of the great coups of a very short career, and people might start thinking differently of what Shanahan and Dubas and Hunter are trying to do.
You guys have probably talked about it. What is the relationship with Shanahan and Babcock from their history? Do anybody know?
I think it would be a pretty good relationship. I've certainly never heard that it's not a good one. Yep. So that would help.
They don't seem to hear anything about it. It's not like old buddies.
You know, I guess the bottom line is, how long does Babcock want to wait to win? Mm-hmm. And a GM was telling me here a few weeks ago, Toronto have some pretty good players. This is a well-respected GM. He said, Doug, trust me, they've got some good players there. They just don't have a good team.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's what Mike Babcock's, one of his great modus operandi is to create a team environment. By the way, there are no more kids at home in the Babcock family.
Yeah,
everybody's graduated high school.
They're empty nesters.
But the one thing that Babcock had going when he got to Detroit, he had a mature Nick Lidstrom, Norris Trophy winner, who was well on his way to being developed when he got there, and he had Zetterberg and Dadzuk. You got three pieces there that give you an amazing, he won one Stanley Cup, but those three guys in the prime of their career, those are three talented players that they don't have here. So it's a little longer process than Detroit.
Right.
It's an interesting day.
We're done. Doug McLean, John Shannon, and Brad Fay, thanks for listening to Hockey Central Noon on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network and on the NHL Network in the United States. Goodbye, David Letterman. Thanks for 33 years. We'll see you tonight, and we'll talk to you tomorrow on Hockey Central.